I would like first to thank the organizer of this meeting and give me this opportunity to talk to you. And I hope that you can understand my accent. My English is very poor. Even when I spend most of time in London, I focus on reading books rather than talking to people. Today, I will talk about several issues. One is about the circumstances surrounding the establishment of the National Archive, because the circumstances are extremely important to know the function of the National Archive in a third world country like Iraq. Was it national, as its name referred to, or not? Then I will talk about Iraqi archival legislation. Then I will talk about the three communities, the Sunni and the Shi'i and the Kurdish community, attitudes towards the issue of records. This is extremely important because these three communities adopted different attitudes towards the documentary heritage of Iraq. At the end, I will focus on the event of April 2003 when the archives of the former regime were attacked, seized, and looted on a large scale by different groups. I will analyze the reasons, and the motives, and the significance of these records for us as Iraqis, as victims of a brutal regime. As you may know, that Iraq was established in 1921 by the British. Between 1921 to 1963, Iraq didn't have a national archive. Many of our records, Ottoman records, British documents that they cover the occupation period, the mandate period, in addition to new Iraqi records, were kept in several places. There was no archival legislation to how to deal or how to protect, preserve, or have access to these records. Republican Iraq was established in 1958 after the military carried out a military coup. 5 years later, the National Archive was set up by the first pan-Arabist government of Abdus Salam Arif. The idea behind the National Archive was that not to create a true historical memory for all Iraqis. The National Archives was created to be an ideological tool to strengthen pan-Arabism and to impose conformity on a very diverse society. Iraq is a very diverse society. You have Jewish community, Christians, Shi'is, Muslim, Arabs, Kurds, Turkmen, Kildan, Assyrian, and so on. So the National Archive was its task is to impose this conformity that all should think like the Arabs, all should be pan-Arabist, and also should identify themselves with Sunni tradition. Although the Sunnis form a minority in Iraq. So the National Archive was not national. Its aim was not to create an Iraqi identity or an Iraqi historical memory. In 1983, under Saddam Hussein, the most progressive archival legislation came into being. In Syria, it was the most progressive archival piece of legislation compared with the rest of the Middle East. But in practice, it was not. All the main ministries, especially the important ministries, did not collaborate with the National Archive. They didn't send their records and use records or the completed records to the National Archive. They just kept all the important sensitive records within these ministries. So we only collected the less important records, while the most important ones, for example, records dealing with the Jewish question were kept away. Records dealings with the Kurdish question kept away from the scholars. Records dealing with the Communist Party and the opposition kept away. British records that cover the occupation period during the First World War and the British Mandate from 1921 to 1932 were kept away from the scholars. So, as you can see, it was ideologically organized to serve the objective of the regime. What was the objective of the regime? Saddam wanted to impose a totalitarian regime to dominate that his Baath party and his ideology to dominate all aspects of life. As you know, dictatorship compared to democratic regime, they are very interested in documenting all the small details about the citizens and everybody. So Saddam Hussein, when he left, behind a huge quantity of records covering the lives of all Iraqis, important people and unimportant people. In 1991, following the invasion of Kuwait and the Allies' invasion of Iraq, a series of uprisings broke out throughout Iraq, in southern Iraq and in the Kurdish region. Ordinary people, attacked the Baath headquarters, the headquarters of the security police and security organizations in 14 provinces out of 18 provinces. Only the Sunni provinces did not revolt against the regime. I did analyze the attitudes of these communities towards the archives that existed in these repressive organizations and in the headquarters of the Baath Party. In Kurdistan, people and the educated class and the political parties paid attention and they knew the significance of the archives of these repressive organizations. The first things they did, they gathered and collected all the records of the Baath Party, of the intelligence agencies, because they wanted to find evidence on the massacres that took place in Halabja and during the infamous Anfal campaigns. You know, in 1988, the regime waged a campaign of ethnic cleansing in Kurdistan. About 182,000 lost their lives. So the Kurds, in general, were keen on finding evidence of these records and to show it to the world. Indeed, and they found tens of millions of documents that cover every details of this terrible campaign. Unlike in Kurdistan, in the south, the Shiis, unfortunately, they burnt everything. They didn't think about the importance of these records for transitional justice purposes and to identify all those who were collaborating with the former regime. They were only busy taking revenge of all those known Baathis or security agents. In central part of Iraq, where the Sunnis are the majority, the Sunnis did not attack these records. They did the opposite. They protect the records of the regime because the regime, they thought, it belonged to them. So we have three communities adopted different attitudes towards the records of the former regime, and that depends on their political awareness. In Kurdistan, the level of political awareness was much higher than the South. So the first day thing, they collected these records, kept it in safe area, then shipped it to, some of it shipped to Britain, then to America. And now they are being used. Because we, in Iraq now, there is a court where we are putting the leaders of the former regime on trial. So these records are extremely useful for that court. During the invasion of 2003, people from outside knew that the educational, cultural institutions were attacked by different groups. But very few people knew that Saddam issued a secret order days before the fall of Baghdad, in which he ordered his men to burn sensitive archives when Baghdad fell. The burning of the archives, or the attack on the archive, started on 8th of April. Lasted 3 days or 4 days to 12th of April. Some archives were attacked on 8th, some on 9th, some on 10th, 11th, and 12th. The National Archive was attacked during the period of from 10th of April to 12th of April. The National Archive attacked by several groups. First groups were ordinary looters, the one you can find everywhere in the world. The opportunist thieves, they attack, they seize the opportunity to carry away with them the most valuable things, like what happened in Los Angeles, I don't know, 20 years ago. The second group were professional thieves or bounty hunters. They knew we had very valuable collections, and they attacked certain part of the building, and they took our rare books and some microfilms collections. The third group, which is by far the most dangerous one, was the Baathists. They set fire to the Republican archives that cover the history of the Baath Party from 1958 up to 1979. Unfortunately, didn't bring with me the images to show you the extent of the damage inflicted upon the National Library and Archives. So three groups attacked the National Archives. We lost, because of these attacks and looting, we lost about 60% of the archives, archival collection, but the most important part of it was the minute of the martial court held by the Baathists to put on trial their opponents. We lost that valuable piece of archival collection. As to the attacks on other archives, different groups attack the archives of the former regime. The first group were the Baathists themselves. They destroyed important records, but not all the records. The invaders, the British and the Americans, especially the Americans. The British were active in the south, in Basra, and Nisan, Amara, Karbala. And they seized a huge quantity of records. And the Americans in Baghdad and in other places. The Pentagon admitted that they shipped to America 48,000 of boxes. Not 48 files, 48,000 of boxes. And even the CIA translated it into English many Iraqi records on their website. Then they canceled whole projects. The Americans seized the records, what they thought important to the issue of justifying the war. First, to find evidence on the weapon of mass destruction. The second, to find a link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. And the third, the issue of the human rights violation by the regime. So they needed these records to justify the war. The unknown reason, which is, I think, was extremely important for the Americans, is how to control the Iraqis after Saddam Hussein. These records document all the details about the communities, about the teachers, about the politicians, opposition, ordinary people. So when you are in control of a country, you need all these details in order to be in control. So these records were extremely important for the Americans, although they made a mess of Iraq after the invasion. Less important records. What did the Americans do? They allowed, for example, the Iraqi Memory Foundation, headed by Kanaan Makki, a well-known Iraqi who lives in exile. They give him the green light to ship out the archives of the Ba'ath Party, which is extremely important, because these archives cover the lives and the activities of all Ba'athis, from the leadership down to the symbol members and supporters. Now they are stored in the Hoover Institute, which is part of Stanford University in America, or something like that. It's a right-wing conservative institution. As to the historical records, like our records, the Americans adopted two attitudes. They tolerated the destruction of the National Archive and the destruction of the historical records. On the other hand, they shipped to America the Jewish archive, which is an historical record, historical archive. So they did not adopt indiscriminate attitude. They adopted discriminate attitude to differentiate the Jewish archive from the Iraqi archives. So they saved that part of the Iraqi documentary heritage for some known and unknown reason, while tolerated the destruction of the historical records. At the same time, different groups attacked the archives of the former regime. The victims and the relatives of the victims of Saddam Hussein. Tens of thousands were missing. For example, my relatives. We don't know anything about them. So the relatives of the victims and the political prisoners, the people who were tortured, they too attacked the archives of the security organization in order to find information about their missing ones. And I have a short story about a friend of mine. His brother was missing for about 15 years. And he told me that he went to the security, to the headquarters of the security police at the middle of Baghdad, and he started to demolish a wall so that he be able to take some files. So the first file he took, it was his brother's file, in which written that his brother was executed. So this is just one story, a real story about why people were attacking the archives of the security police. Their motive was noble, but unfortunately a lot of records are now missing because of this arbitrary action. The second group, or the most dangerous group, the Iraqi political parties, now in power. Shiites, Kurds, communists, secular, religious forces, all attacked the archives. and they have their own reasons. First is to know the names of all those who committed the crimes. Second, to know all the traitors, because among them were traitors. Third is to blackmail their opponents. And they did use it to blackmail and to blacken the names, defame the others. So even they started to publish these articles on their newspapers. The other group were professional. I don't know how can I explain this, but professional, ruthless looters. They collected millions of records of the victims, set up their own NGO in Baghdad, and they started to blackmail the victims. We don't give you the file on your relatives unless you pay money. This is another group. And I mentioned the Baathists, and we have foreign media. Foreign media who came with the... foreign media journalists took a huge quantity of records with them, Arab and foreigners. For these journalists to make money and to make a name for them, and indeed Al Jazeera TV, Al Arabiya TV, and other TVs made programs of Iraqi records. After I became a director in late 2003, I waged a campaign to recover all these records because of their importance to all Iraqis, especially to the victims, and even to the academic circles in Iraq. In 2004, I put forward a suggestion to the Council of Ministers. I didn't know they did approve it, and that they issued an executive order in which they prohibited the collection, the publishing, or the smuggling of all records of the former regime. But that order were kept secret. I discovered that my suggestion was accepted in 2009. So 5 years took me to understand that, yes, they took a decision and they agreed with me the important, but the people around them did not send the order to all the Iraqi media, to all the ministries and the consulate party. Why? Because the people who looted these records are in power. It was not in their interest that the National Archive start to collect all these missing records. We started to negotiate with the Americans about these records. Of course, maybe they are still the master of the country. And to explain to the military and to the civilian officials at the U.S. Embassy that these records are extremely important to us. And I explained several important points, that the victims need to be rehabilitated, their dignity to be restored, to be compensated. You are violating the rights of these victims as Saddam Hussein did. There is no difference between you and Saddam Hussein, because this records the only evidence they have on their suffering, and they are the tool of rehabilitation. Second, we need these records for the purposes of transitional justice, to identify all those who committed a crime, many of them still in power, occupying very sensitive position in the state, in government, in the army, in the police. So extremely important to identify these criminals. The third issue is national reconciliation. RICO is extremely important for this process of national reconciliation between the Arabs and the Kurds, and between the Shia Arabs and Sunni Arabs. You cannot have a true national reconciliation without these records. The records, as I said, they document everything, even telephone calls. The Sunni, the representative of the Sunni community define national reconciliation differently from the Kurds, and the Kurds differently from the Shia. For the Kurds, national reconciliation, it means that the Arabs should admit that they committed a crime or a genocide against the Kurds. But this is a true and not a true, just a true. Arab government, Arab army attacked Kurdistan, and they killed tens of thousands of innocent men, women, children. But the records show you that many Kurds collaborated. So national reconciliation will not include these collaborators, or to publish their names, or to identify them, or to put them on trial. I'm Kurds, so I know, and I have the right to know the name of the collaborators, because they're responsible. They were responsible for what happened in Kurdistan. The Shiis, the same. Any Shi'i collaborator with Saddam Hussein who was willing to cooperate with the new regime and join a Shi'i political party will not be punished. So the definition of national reconciliation not to include these elements, because these people suddenly became a nice guys. The Sunnis. Sunnis are afraid of the records, because really it was a Sunni Arab regime, and the crimes committed by a Sunni Arab political elite. So it's not in their interest to be identified as a community that oppressed the Kurdish and the Shi'i community. So the record is extremely important for these communities, the Sunnis, to admit that they were responsible mainly for what went wrong in Iraq. I have to admit that. Until now, their leaders don't admit. They think their mistakes were made, just mistakes under Saddam Hussein. We need the records for other reason. 35 years of dictatorship has changed our society in a radical way. Fascism is not just a political system, it's a social, economical system. It changed people beyond recognition. When I went to Baghdad after 20 years, I was astonished by the change that I was an Iraqi, but stranger in my own town. Everything changed, people behavior, mentality, logic, everything. But the Iraqis still don't understand or don't realize how much they change under dictatorship. And this period, the post-invasion period and the chaos and the violence, did not give them the opportunity to look back about what happened under Saddam Hussein. So they are just focusing on everyday events in Iraq. So we need these records to make Iraqis, or then Iraq, realize how much they changed, because you cannot establish a new Iraq without understanding the old Iraq, without analyzing the legacies, the negative legacies of the former regime. Many Iraqis think Saddam was doing the right thing when he was a dictator, because they think the world as a whole behaving like Saddam Hussein, because they lived in isolation for too long. So we need these records to make the Iraqis confront the bitter realities of their past. I have tens of records in which I found terrible information. Neighbor was spying on a neighbor, a wife spying on her husband, on his brother-in-law, and so on. Under Saddam Hussein, all the horizontal relations were destroyed. All the relations were vertical. The system of taking orders. People would not communicate directly to each other. They communicated through the Ba'ath Party. In every corner of the street, the Ba'ath Party was there. The security police was there. So the social fabric of society totally destroyed under Saddam Hussein. This is what we inherited from Saddam Hussein, and very few people in the world, especially in Europe and America, understand what happened in Iraq. They just focusing on the invasion, but not on the legacy of Saddam Hussein. So, if we want to build a new society, new state, a new system, we need to study these records and to understand the extent to which people, society changed. And the last point I would like to make is about the identity of Iraq, about the historical memory of Iraqis. From 1921, when the Iraq state was established, to 2003, when Saddam's regime was thrown, the regime has three factions, or it was characterized by three features. It was a Sunni state, it was an Arab state, and it was pan-Arab state. Religiously Sunni, sectarian. Ethnically, from an ethnic point of view, it was Arab. And ideologically, it was pan-Arabist. The state and the identity of the state, of the concept of the state, was based on excluding the others instead of including the others. I mentioned conformity. We did not have an Iraq-wide identity. We still don't have an Iraqi identity. We don't have a true historical memory, because there was one version to our history. History was interpreted in one-sided manner. We had a false history. So these records are extremely important. I'll give you one example. Up to 2003, the records of the British occupation, British mandates of the monarchical period of the First Republic, the Second Republic, and the Third Republic, all kept in a secret place. So, as a scholar, how you can write the modern history of Iraq since the establishment of the Iraqi state in an objective way? And the real materials, the primary sources, is not you are not able to have access to it. When I said that National Archive was an ideological tool for this reason, fortunately, after the fall of the regime, we started to declassify hundreds of thousands of British records, records of the monarchical period and the First and Second and Third Republics. So The records of the Ba'ath Party, of the Saddam's regime, and the historical records that kept away from us, extremely important for political reasons, for social reasons, for academic reasons. What is our plan? You know, Iraq, if you follow the news in Iraq, it's very chaotic there. We have a national government. But it's not national, really. There is disunity at all levels, from the top to the bottom. You are responsible for a national archive, or national, because we are functioning as a national library and a national archive. What do you do when you are in a very chaotic situation, in an unstable country, politically speaking? There is terrorist attacks, the Ba'ath is waging a campaign to return to power. And the country facing a lot of problems, security problems, financial problems, economic problems, problems at educational and cultural levels. Should we wait or take the initiative? We decided as a National Library and National Archives to take initiatives and to wage campaign in Iraq and in the United States. In the United States, unfortunately, we found a lot of support from U.S., from American archivists, from American librarians, and from Canada, from Britain, and everywhere. All they support our campaign to recover all the missing records. And they did issue a lot of statements in support of our positions. We used the American media to pressurize the American decision makers. In Iraq, we had a more difficult job. It's a divided society, divided government. Your minister is a Sunni, prime minister is a Shia, the deputy is a Kurd, the other deputy is a Christian, the other deputy is Turkmen. How can you manage to, you know, to persuade the council of ministers to issue a series of orders? I don't know how we did it. The council of ministers issued a series of executive orders based on the 1983 archival legislation. They prohibited the use, the collections, and the declosing or the disclosure of these records by Iraqi newspaper. For the first time, the National Archive was able to force all Iraqi newspapers not to publish secret records of the former regime. That was a small achievement. Second is to force all the ministries, all state-run institutions, not to burn a single paper without the approval of the National Archive. And this is another small achievement for the National Archive, that in every ministry, in every state-run institution, now there is a committee. We are a member of that committee. That committee will decide that we don't need these records, but we need the approval of the National Archive. We will study the records, and we say yes or no to destroy them. If we need them, we will ask them to transport them to us. We achieved that. Many ministries and many state-run institutions burned a lot, started to burn unwanted records. We did stop that. We started to name the institution that started to burn. So we stopped the burning of the unwanted, so-called unwanted records or out-of-use records. Then The important one is to force everybody, the political parties, individuals, NGOs, to hand over to the National Archive the records they seized during the events of April 2003. I collected from the Ministry of Interior maybe 1 million records dealing with the certain peoples who were awarded by Saddam Hussein for being very loyal. We have all the names and every details about life, of their life. We had all the reports of ordinary people reporting to the Ministry of Interior, to the Baath parties, information about their neighbors, husbands, wives. So we have them. So for the first time in Iraq's history, that the Ministry of Interior started to send records to the National Archive, recognizing the importance of the records. This was another positive, that a repressive organization, a repressive institution, started to collaborate with the National Archive. And we started to collect from other people. For example, Los Angeles Times. They seized quantity of important records of the former regime. I told you about the mid journalists, foreign and Arab journalists, looted. But Los Angeles Times was the first to hand over the records. And they included tapes recording the conversation between people who lived in exile and their relatives in Baghdad, photographs, papers, and so on. And some individuals came to my office and they handed over records. For example, someone lives in Washington, D.C. He was in the opposition, gave me 48 boxes of files covering the history of the Communist Party, with a lot of details about their activists in Iraq and in Kurdistan. Unfortunately, we have a political crisis in Iraq now. We have an election. So we're not able to force everybody to hand over the seized records or to send a delegation to Washington. Because if you go now to Washington, no one will give you a damn. So why I go, I'm in a very weak position. So I need first a stable government in Baghdad with a clear mandate to negotiate with the Americans about the seized records, because we are dealing with the Pentagon, not with someone on your level or with the CIA. So at least you need your government behind your back, not stopping you from the back. The other things, we need a stable government to strengthen and activate the old archival legislation. So, for the time being, we are postponing all our activities, but we force all the staff of the ministries, all of the ministries, for the first time in Pakistan, to receive a training in the National Archive by force. So, for the past 18 months, every ministry sent its staff to the National Archive to receive a training on archiving, on documenting, and so on. So we achieved something, but on the other, we did not achieve a lot of things. So this is the situation with the National Archives. So it's all the problems we inherited, and we are facing a new task. The new task demands from us to reform our function, to redefine our objectives, because we are not a dictatorship. We need to reform ourselves before we could be the representative of a progressive Iraq. So at our institutional level, we democratize the policy making within the institution. We put an end to all the negative culture of Saddam Hussein, culture of taking order, of destroying all the horizontal relations. You know, when I was appointed director, when first I met my staff, as if I was in a military camp, and I was the chief commander of the institution, and they were my soldiers. You know, so it's very hierarchical. It was very hierarchical, and I have to change that, because you cannot change your society without change, starting with yourself and with your staff. All the head of departments are elected, freely elected by the member of that department. They could remove them anytime they like. We have two houses system. The bureaucrats, the head of the department, in one council, and the representatives of the librarian and the archivist in the other council. So both councils make decisions and implement policies. What I'm trying to say, the National Archive of Iraq, unlike the National Archive of the UK, is trying to widen its social responsibility. It's not just to look after historical records, but also to collect, to preserve, and to make available the sensitive records of the former regime. So it will not function as a traditional archives. Is it clear? We are trying to, you know, to change the whole structure and the function of the National Archive to function like the archives of the Stasi in Germany and as a German National Archive, to combine both functions in one institution under one legislation. And I participated in drafting of a new legislation that we divided the records into, we categorized them into three categories. One, historical records. The second, recorders of the Ba'ath Party. And the third, the records of the security organizations. And our hope is that the access to each of these collections will be different. And we will have direct relations with the court, with the institution of a transitional justice. We have three institutions which part of this transition justice: Ministry of Human Rights, the State Board of Political Prisoners and Detainees, and the State Board of Matters. Is it matters called in English? The people who are killed. Matters, sorry. Sorry for my poor English. So we had to organize the access in a logical, in a legal way, and to put an end to all political and legal abuses of these records. This is our ambition. And I hope we could achieve that when we will have an enlightened government in Iraq. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem that is likely at the moment. Thank you for listening. Thank you.